verses 9 to 17. Hathakak went back and reported to Esther what Mordecai had said. Then she instructed him to say to Mordecai, "All the king's officials and the people of royal palaces know that for any man or woman who approaches the king in the inner court without being summoned, the king has but one law, that they be put to death until the king extends the gold scepter to them and spares their lives. But 30 days have passed since I was called to go to the king." When Esther's words were reported to Mordecai, he sent back his answer, "Do not think that because you are in the king's house, you alone of all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place, but you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but what you have come to your royal position for such a time as this?" Then Esther sent the reply to Mordecai, "Go, gather together all the Jews who are in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my attendants will fast as you do. When this is done, I will go to the king, even though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish." So Mordecai went away and carried out all of Esther's instructions.
Jerry. Well, I need to put this into some sort of context now. It really is a privilege to come alongside you and just to uncover this marvellous story in the Old Testament of Esther and indeed Mordecai. I'm going to start with the theme. God has great plans for all of us, all believers. He has marked each person, made his plan, presented the provision for his plan. He's prepared the place to provide a serving purpose through his power and indeed his presence through us. In summary, this life event, this very important life event, explains God's sovereignty and his grand design because of his great love for his people. The story of Esther, whose name originally, Jewish name originally, was Hadassah, and her name means hidden place. And Mordecai, who's Esther's older cousin, who was like a father figure, because Esther's parents went to Jerusalem after the destruction of Judea, returned to Jerusalem, leaving Esther and Mordecai behind. This story is a great example of people being presented an opportunity against all odds. We'll see the summary of the story in a minute. It's against all odds to serve God's purpose by going by his plans. But, the big but, is his timing. It's not their timing. They have to wait for his timing. To serve a specific, important purpose in God's plan. And that is basically to save all the Jews in this place called Susa. So let's just have a look at the when, where, and who does this involve. 480 BC, so some 2,500 years ago. Incredible, isn't it, to think of that? It's the Persian Empire, which stretched from India to the Nile. It's a very, very large area, consisting of 127 different districts. The Jews were a vast minority at the time. Most of the people were Persians or Midianites. King Xerxes, and I hope I pronounced that name right, he was the king, and the king back then, 2,500 years ago, was treated like a god by the people. The king was married to Queen Vashti, our second person, if you like, in this summary, who disobeys an order and is dethroned, as we'll see in a minute. The story involves a person called Haman, a Persian who's a descendant of King Agag, who was a big enemy of the Jews. Now, Haman becomes a very influential person, especially to the king, because the king makes him second in charge. And then we come to the two people who play a massive part in God's plan, and that is Mordecai, the older cousin of Esther, and Esther herself, who is a very beautiful Jewish virgin. I split this into six very short sections. Persian and media leaders, princes, nobles, and others were invited to King Xerxes' big banquet. And this was after spending 6 months of displaying all his wealth and his palace, what they called a citadel in the capital, Susa. And then he had this seven-day banquet. Now, on the seventh day, I think we'll put the notes to one side. On the seventh day, King Xerxes says, I'd like to see my wife. I want to see Queen Vashti. I want to see her in her royal crown. Go get her. By that time, all the people who were celebrating, seventh day of a banquet, wine was never ending, various types of wine. People were told, drink what you like. And people did drink what they like. So along goes one of the noblemen to the queen and says, your king needs to see you in your noble crown. The queen declines. Now, some of this isn't in the Bible. It's research I've done. But I'm going to present you the research because it might give you, and certainly me, a deeper understanding. There is talk that sometimes when somebody is asked to come with their crown, it is with their crown alone. So they go naked with their crown. So it's understandable from Queen Vashti's point of view, I don't really want to be seen naked in front of all these people who are on their seventh day of the banquet, drinking as much wine as they really want to. Also, there is, in some summaries, commentaries, there is the thought that maybe she was pregnant to the next king, Antaxerxes. So just to give you a little bit more depth to that. However, you can imagine the worries of all the nobles, the princes. The queen has said no. This is going to set such a bad example. With all our women folk, if they hear the queen has declined the king's wish, that they're not going to respect us in any way at all. Something's going to have to be done about this. So, seven advisors, the number seven comes up quite often in this story. Seven advisors suggest to the king that he needs a replacement queen. And he needs this quite soon. And they say to the king, I think what we'll do is we'll go and collect all the virgins, all the pretty virgins for you, and we'll bring them to your palace. And then you can decide who's going to be the next queen. The king gives this just a little bit of thought and thinks it's a good idea. So there are many, many, many dozens of virgins. Initially, it is thought that Esther actually hides. Whether she hides or not, she is found and she is brought to the palace. In Mordecai's horror, and Mordecai says, knowing that Esther is a Jew and all the others are Persian, in the main, says, keep the fact that you're a Jew quiet, please. I'm sure there's a reason this has happened. Go with my love. The seven eunuchs were set a task to ensure each virgin looked at their best. 6 months of myrrh oil, oil of myrrh, another 6 months of beauty treatments. Hard to believe, isn't it? How long does it take us to get ready in the morning? Not a year. So 1 year invested, and the seven eunuchs are responsible for that. It was also thought a custom at the time that, and this gives you some idea of the purity is a word I want to use, of Esther, a custom to bring something to the king which either enhanced your own beauty or pleased the king. So, for example, one of the brides may have had a long necklace of pearls dangling to her feet. one of the brides, one of the probable, hopeful brides. Let's reword that. Another hopeful bride may turn around and have a fan full of feathers. In one of the stories of Esther, in more detail, Esther is supposed to just pick a red rose and go to the king with just this little red rose that's opening up in full bloom. The king was besotted and asked Esther to be moved to the best place in the harem, served by 7 female servants of the king's palace. They were wed in the 7th year of the king's reign. Something we need to know about the custom, which is easy to overlook, is even though you are the queen and you are wed to the king, you couldn't just walk in. You couldn't even knock on the door. You could only go to see the king if you were invited. To give that reading a little bit of context, Esther was at one stage very worried about her life because she had to see the king. You'll find out why in a minute. But she had to see the king, but seeing the king without an invitation, the king had the right, as was the custom, to put her to death. So high stakes, if you like. During this time, a loyal servant, so-called Haman, seemed to do all the right things when in the presence of the king. It is said that he would give the king compliments. "You're looking lovely today, king. I do like the robe you're wearing." This wore a little bit thin with the king after a little while, to say the least. However, he was made second in charge. And what happened, and this is coming up to the main crux of the story, what happened was he put a doubt in the king's mind. Basically, because Mordecai refused to bow to nobody except God. He refused to bow to Haman when Haman went around with his self-importance. Haman turned around and said to the king, "King, we have trouble. The minority of people living here in this part of Persia, in your empire, king, they are not paying their taxes. They are gossiping. And I've got people who don't even bow down to me. King, this is a real problem. I don't want this being a big problem. I think we need to stamp it out if it is your will." So after a rather cunning conversation with the king, he gets his own way. The king actually takes his signet ring off so he can write the letter, get all the scribes to write the letter, out to the 127 states to say, at a specific time, any Jew will be slain, will be killed. Shocking, isn't it? Absolutely shocking. And the king agreed to this. He was sort of like pushed into it a little bit, but he agreed to it. A decree was made, and a lot was drawn. Now, a lot was called a pur, P-U-R. Some people would look at the process called Purim, and many will have heard the festival of Purim. And we'll come on to this now of how that was done. So to work out the best time to kill all these Jews, something like a box with coloured balls was used, not quite the lottery with the white gloves, but a ball was picked to find out what month. And it was the 12th month that the Jews were going to be slain. Another ball was picked out to find out what day, and it was the 13th day the Jews were going to be slain. Now, Mordecai and both Esther were a little bit relieved because they were thinking, well, we seem to be in God's plan here. If it was next month, you know, at least we've got a year for God to work through us for his purpose. So they call it the Purim. Moving swiftly on. During this time, Haman had showed great favour to the king. We've already said he was second in charge. He had actually asked his workers and some of his family to build a platform and a noose, 50 cubits in height, 77 foot roughly, to in readiness to hang Mordecai. Haman hated Mordecai with a vengeance. So he had this already built for him. However, God had led that path of Mordecai up to the citadel, up to the palace, just to try and check. He had to pay money to the guards. Please check how Esther is. Can you just check how Esther's doing? Well, that's good. Thank you for that news. What? About to see the king. Okay. And as he's about to leave, he overhears a conversation. Two conspirators plotting to kill the king, King Xerxes, by putting some poison in his drink. So he goes away thinking, oh, I've got this news. What shall I do with it? What shall I do with it? So he asks for Queen Esther to come to see him. Tells Queen Esther this news. And that's where our reading comes into quite nicely now, because Esther is, I've got this news. The king's going to be poisoned. I've got to tell the king. How can I approach the king? I'm going to be killed. So they go into a period of fasting. They go into a period of prayer. Esther goes to see the king. The king at first comes towards her like this, thinking, what is she doing seeing me? Sees her head bowed. What do you want, my queen? He says. She lifts her head and says, I've got somebody in mind who has been of great service to the king, and I think he should be honoured. I'd like you to come to a banquet. You and Haman, your right-hand man, come to a banquet so I can repeat this. The king says, my queen, you can have anything you want. You can have half my lands if you want. We will be at your banquet. So the next day, just the two, Haman and the king, Xerxes, go to Esther, who's prepared this lovely banquet. And this is a good point about God's timing in this. Because instead of Esther spilling the beans there and then, she repeats this request of, you know, you said about somebody who's done you good, king. What's the best way to reward them? Haman thinks it's about himself. So Haman's there going, well, I would suggest the king uses one of his best horses, puts the best robes on the horse, and this person who's done the king so many favours is led around the courtyard. Esther, like I said, doesn't seize that opportunity. Esther turns around and says, I'll tell you what, I'd like you both to come to a banquet. Yes, a second banquet tomorrow. Now, during the night, what happens? The king has a very restless, we've all had them, haven't we? A very restless night of sleep with something on his mind. He picks up the archives. They were very good at writing what was happening those days, so future kings could look back at history. And he comes across this, oh, hang on a minute. I remember Esther coming to me to tell me also about this poison in my drink, this planned conspiratory. Who was responsible for giving Esther that information? Mordecai. Oh, maybe it's Mordecai who should be honoured. He should be the one who's led around the city on a horse in royal robes. So the next day comes, and Esther tells the king, having told the king already about the poison, of course, tells the king about this plot and says to the king, my people, king, my people are going to be killed on the 13th day of the 12th month. They're all going to be slain. Is that fair, my king? And he goes, why my people? Well, Mordecai, you know, he's related to me. A Jewish. So it just settles. His love for her is so great. He pushes that to one side. Who does he say, is responsible? I prefer not to tell you, really, my king. You must tell me, Esther. You must tell me. Well, it all came about, as you probably are aware, king, through this man, Haman. So that big scaffolding and that noose, 77 foot high, that Haman had built to kill Mordecai, was used to kill Haman. Now, there's an expression, isn't there? You've got to be very, very careful we don't hang ourselves. And I just sometimes wonder whether the expression goes way back in the Bible. So Esther really puts herself at risk. Great risk. I'm going to come on to my summary now. What does it mean to us? Who's in charge? We're not in charge of our lives. Yes, we can be responsible for our actions. But who's in charge? God. Only God is in charge. We can therefore take courage always. He will guide us through thick and thin. Psalm 119, verse 105, is a short one and it's a beautiful one. Your word is a lamp for my feet, a light on my path. Not a light for my path. That word on is probably the most important word in that short section of that psalm. Because the path is already prepared for us. It's down to us whether we use our eyes, whether we use our ears, whether we open our hearts to recognise the path there. It's already been lain burned. If I had more time, I'd have read Psalm 139, where he knows, God knows everything. Before we're even born, he knows the words that are spoken from our lips before they're actually spoken. He knows what's in our heart. He knows what God-given skills, even before we're born. Number two, we are not masters of our own destiny. I've mentioned this already. We are rescuing servants as long as we see, listen and feel. He has a plan for each and every one of us. That plan could be like a grain of sand. Could actually be waking up thinking, I was thinking of Elsie this morning. I want to give her a ring and see how she's doing. I was thinking of popping into Jack. He had a power cut. I wonder if I could pop a stew into him. And it's not dismissing those little signs, those plants, because that's the Holy Spirit so often working through us. Number three, fools rush in where angels dare to tread. His timing, not ours. Mordecai, he followed that path and overheard that discussion of the plot to kill the king, which made Esther be brave and go and see the king. Esther made time for God by giving a second banquet. So the king would have a restless night's sleep, look at the records and realise it's Mordecai who's the hero, not Haman. And finally, we have to be bold and have courage. We have to be confident in God's control in our lives. Joshua 24, verse 15 puts it really neatly, actually. Choose this day whom you will serve. And Joshua's referring to serving that of the flesh, that of the Holy Spirit. I like to think of it as worldly and godly. And worldly can so easily be, I need this, I need that. How do I look? What can I spend some of my money on? And godly can be, how's my brothers and sisters? Maybe I'll just go for a walk. Maybe I'll just see what happens. I'll just see where God's going to put me. I'll make myself available to God, not available to me. But courage alone is not enough. We must act with self-sacrifice and courage to follow God's, not our, guidance, like Esther and Mordecai did. Amen.